Rockstep Radio, on demand, with Isabel Hayworth.
Welcome, Sharon Davis, to Rockstep Radio.
Ah, thank you for having me.
So you've been up doing a workshop with Tina of Would You Dance?
Absolutely right. We have been sweating today. We did 4 hours of solo jazz, and we're recovering.
How did you find Manchester?
Oh, wonderful. You guys have a fantastic scene here. Oh my God, everyone worked really hard for me today, and I didn't go easy on them. So yeah, congratulations. Great community here.
You're basically one of the stars of the Lindy Hop scene. You've got so much behind you. You're Bonnie Fox from your burlesque, your jazz classes down in London, and you're also, of course, director of the European Swing Dance Championships, and you're winner of so many awards. I mean, looking at your website, it's just amazing. When you look at that, how does it feel to kind of reflect on that sort of history of things that you've done?
Well, when you say it like that, it does sound really good. I mean, I always say you see everyone else's highlight reel, but I see the behind the scenes. So behind the scenes is a lot of blood, sweat and tears. It's been a really crazy journey for the last, 15 years, I suppose. Yeah, no, I'm really happy. And now, after sort of traveling the world for that much time, I'm trying to settle down in London and travel a little less, which is a whole new page in the story. So I'm trying to do it all.
Because you came originally from Australia, didn't you?
That's right. I learned to dance in Perth, Western Australia. My teachers there, Deborah and Glenn Moore, amazing dancers, still great inspirations to me. And we were really lucky because we were isolated, but for that same reason, we brought a lot of the international instructors and legends out to learn from. And I think in a way, I got to learn from them a lot more than people in maybe less isolated places. So yeah, I'm actually really, really grateful for my sort of Lindy upbringing out down under.
How did you end up in London then? Was it because you were teaching such a lot and you chose London, or was it a particular reason that you ended up in London in the end?
It was a long meandering journey to get to London. I left Australia in 2007, 2006, and that's the year that I met a dashing Argentine lad by the name of Juan Vichafanier. And then because we both came from faraway places, we couldn't really sustainably join the Lindy Hop community and fly back and forward every time. So we sort of abandoned our home countries and went on the road. And we were on the road together, sort of traveling as homeless vagabonds for about eight or 9 years. And really, we lived all over the world. I spent time in Argentina with Juan's family, in North America, in Europe, in Asia, all over. Lindy Hop really, swing dancing really showed me the world, which was amazing. But then, as with everyone, the itch to have some roots began. And my mother is actually English and my father is Australian, so I'm a dual citizen. So I have the passport. It made sense to come to London. And, you know, London is so exciting. It's one of the biggest swing scenes in the world. There are, God, so many dancers and so many spectacular dancers. Like, really, watch out, world. London dancers are about to win everything. Yeah. I have a school there now called JazzMed, a brand new school, my own studio in North London. I'm trying to build.
Can you actually tell the difference between people when they dance? Because obviously you've danced all over the world now. Can you tell a difference from one person's dancing to another person's dancing? Can you localize them in terms of what their dance style's like?
Yes, most definitely. Oh, wow. There are regional styles that are very, very obvious. So usually you can watch a dancer on the social dance floor and you can spot exactly where they're from or who their teacher was. And we're usually spot on when we make those guesses.
So how did you come to swing dancing in the very start when you were in Australia? How did that all come about?
The creation story.
Let's have it.
I really discovered it the same way a lot of people do. I had never danced in my life. I wasn't even a particularly sporty person. And I wandered through the nightlife district in Perth where I grew up. I was 19 years old. And there was an American-themed nightclub or bar called the Mustang Bar. And they had a jazz band or a kind of jump blues band, I guess you would say, with live horns. And they were blaring out onto the sidewalk. So when we walked past, me and some friends, we had to go in and look. We looked around the corner and there were people dressed from the 1940s dancing this ridiculous dance. And I remember something in my brain broke. I lost my mind for a moment and I accosted somebody like, "What is this?" Then sort of handed me a flyer, completely flustered, like, "It's called Lindy Hop. Here, take a lesson." And I went to that class the next day. And yeah, I just completely lost my mind. When I saw Lindy Hop, I knew it was for me, and I was addicted from that moment onwards.
So did you have quite a strong dance background then? Because you do seem to take a lot of elements of different things. Were you dancing before then?
No, not at all. I had never danced in my life. But I was in a theatre, so I was used to being on stage and being a performer and putting character into what I do. And I think I was just creative. Mm. So I think that's my style is sort of draws inspiration from a lot of different things. And because I've always been comfortable with that, that's helped me. So my Lindy Hop, you know, a lot of my heroes, the icons that I think have inspired my dance the most aren't even Lindy Hoppers, you know, right. They're maybe tap dancers or other legends from the 1930s and 40s that weren't actually Lindy Hopping, as well as, of course, the icons of Lindy, but also all other styles. And that's how I fell into burlesque as well. And in burlesque, even more so, you can draw in whatever inspiration you want. I take a lot of other styles of dance classes and just watch a lot of films. I have a film collection of all, like anything that has dancing in it, from 1915 to 1955, I own it. And when I find a new one, it's the best moment of my week.
So do you do lots of different types of classes now? Because I know you do On Point, don't you, for your burlesque stuff? So that must have been quite difficult to get into.
Yeah, that was a steep learning curve, but I wouldn't say I have the training that I should have to dance On Point. But I wanted to do it for the aesthetic in burlesque. Mm-hmm. So yes, I sort of bribed a classical instructor into giving me a boot camp and giving me permission to make sure I was strong enough to do it. But no, I don't have as much classical training as I should, really. And I wish I did. You know, I'm always jealous of dancers that started when they were 4 years old with tap and jazz and ballet. And it's an amazing background. But somehow maybe I think also my lack of training might have helped me be a little more freer with creating my style. So I guess I don't regret anything.
Yeah. How do you train for those things then? Do you keep them up on a weekly basis and you do a bit of tap and you do a bit of point work and you do a bit of ballet or modern jazz? How does it work?
You mean me personally?
Yeah.
I do not train on such a strict schedule as that. Not at all. I mean, I'm so busy. I really go from sort of show to workshop to class that any kind of regular schedule has been difficult to maintain. So usually, and this is true, I think, for most professional swing dancers, is rehearsal means rehearsal for a specific thing, for a job, for a competition, for a show. And since you're pretty much doing that all the time, that then becomes your training routine. But I really think we'd all do so much better if instead we had a more regular schedule of sort of physical training for a few hours a day and you know, drilling our specific skills in the same way other dance styles do, like classical or ballroom. But also the thing about what we do is that it is jazz. You know, jazz lifestyle is not about that. It might be about intensely focused practice because you've got in that frame of mind and had a few glasses of wine and just blinked and you realize you've been doing the same 6-beat step for 8 hours. That would probably be the closest thing you would get to intensive training in the real jazz lifestyle. And I think if you move yourself away too much, you start to lose the authenticity in your style and the audience can tell.
Yeah.
So there's something, we have to strike that balance. Like, we've got to be a little rough around the edges. Mm-hmm. And if you do overtrain in anything other than what we do, it does begin to show, or at least you need to be careful.
Yeah, definitely. So talking about your style, you have a very feminine style, which you're kind of known for. Was that something that you decided on, or did that evolve as you carried on dancing?
Oh, you're so nice. Thank you. I try. I remember the moment because I can tell you, for the first maybe 3 or 4 years of Lindy Hop, I wanted to be Frida Sagadahl. She was one of my first teachers. Her power, her precision, the clarity of her rhythms, I wanted it so bad, that the strength of her. But at one point, maybe 3 years into my dancing, I realized that I didn't have such a powerful frame as she had. My figure was totally different to hers. And that day, when I stopped trying to be somebody else with a totally different background, a totally different body type, to me, suddenly everything became easier. For one thing, my technique shot up. I improved in a much shorter amount of time. And when I kind of accepted with myself that, you know what, I'm a girly girl and I like those feminine shapes. And, you know, also Frankie Manning was one of my teachers. And so I was so inspired by Helza Poppin and Ann Johnson, Willa Mae Ricker, and I just wanted to be them. But I have such a different physique. Yeah. So when I started turning towards vintage inspiration from people like Jean Veloz and Jewel McGowan, then suddenly things started to fall into place. So I do think that not resisting your own body type is a really important moment. And it lets you find yourself in your dancing. So yeah, I remember that moment.
You do a lot of solo teaching. There have been a few people who've been quite honest about the fact that they've struggled being female solo teachers because they feel that sometimes there is a perception that there may not be as many opportunities for women solo teachers as for men. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I've heard that as well. People have brought that up with me before. I think I'm just very determined. I've always had, from the beginning, since I at least got my foot in the door in the international community, I suppose, I was always as much an expert on solo dancing as I was on Lindy Hop, and maybe in a way that's what Juan and I, what helped us get those first gigs and helped us get off the ground floor, was that we were both interested in performing, which now is much bigger in the community, but back then, like putting on a tuxedo and a nice and a pair of heels and trying to put on a show with some glamour and class was unheard of. People thought we were very odd. Everyone else was Lindy Hopping in jeans, and maybe there was even a little bit of a spirit against dressing up too much and that kind of thing. So we had that as an angle, I guess, that made us stand out a little. And we were both strong solo dancers and just as passionate about solo dancing as Lindy Hop. And we've always had this attitude that they shouldn't be divided so much. And I think that's helped. So maybe when you're hiring me, you're not just hiring a solo dancer, you're just hiring a swing dancer. But I don't think there's any reason for women jazz dancers to struggle more or less, because particularly in our style, vintage jazz dancing, authentic jazz, vernacular jazz, jazz roots, whatever you want to call it, it can be feminized. I mean, it can be sort of masculinized, and it can really sit in the middle. So a lot of my inspirations are male dancers, and a lot of, like in class today, we were doing a routine. I was telling them the origins of a lot of the steps, and there was like Donald O'Connor was one name that came up, Gene Kelly, and, you know, Fred Astaire, the Nicholas Brothers, all these names pop up in my inspirations for my choreographies a lot, which means the fact that I'm doing them and like them on my body hopefully means that I can make them work for my female students. But the fact that originally they're male steps means that, of course, they work for everybody. Yeah. But it's difficult because we come from it's a vintage art form, what we do. It's a dance from a very different time that was heteronormative, male leaders, female followers. And so we're bringing this old-fashioned dance, which had very different values, trying to bring it into the modern age, particularly right now. I mean, we're right in the jungle of dealing with reevaluating gender norms. So I'm really, really pleased that Lindy Hop is a kind of in the thick of it right now, especially when jazz is a great way to approach it as well.
Do you think Lindy Hop is growing? Do you think it's still on the rise?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, I remember having this feeling in like the year 2000 or so. We were like, is the fad going to end? Is the trend... We really thought it's possible this might end. It might go away. We might lose Lindy Hop. That was a real worry that we had. And of course, you know, 10, 15, 20 years on, everyone's accepted it's not going anywhere. but yeah, it is definitely growing all around the world. And every month I'll get an inquiry from somewhere new. I just had an email last week from Taipei. There is a swing scene there now. You know, it's growing in Asia. It's springing up in all the different countries, in Vietnam and Thailand and China and Korea and Japan. It's everywhere. Singapore, Australia, of course, New Zealand. and now we are starting to have burgeoning scenes in Africa. So it's like it's going full circle. Yeah. Which is astonishing. Of course, South America, where Juan is, he's building the scene in Buenos Aires. But in other countries as well, there it's starting. So it's just spreading and growing. And I think only good things can come from that.
So European Swing Dance Championships. Amazing. How did that come about?
It was an idea I had for a while. I think maybe as other Europeans find, if you want to compete in swing dancing, more often than not, you feel that you would need to fly yourself to North America to mm-hmm. compete in the International Lindy Hop Championships, the now defunct Ultimate Lindy Hop Showdown or these competitions. And it's a big investment. It's very expensive. It's a lot of time. And also there's a different style there. The European scene is different.
In what way?
There's definite style differences and different priorities, I think. And so when European dancers do go to the USA, I think sometimes they don't feel as accepted, or what they value isn't recognized in the results as much. And also vice versa, of course, when North American dancers come to Europe, oftentimes, and I've experienced this at ESDC, they're surprised at the results because I think the values are a little different.
What specific values are you talking about?
I think the North American scene has a really strong focus on creativity and is maybe a little less interested in polish.
Right, technique.
Yeah. Well, I mean, of course, these things are valued as well, so it's hard to say. Mm. But I think high levels of sort of professional performance polish is one of the markers of what is valued in Europe, at least in my experience at the European Swing Dance Championships. Yeah. Whereas in the USA and Canada, maybe people that are really creative and doing things that haven't been seen before, even if the technique level might be lower, they might be valued over. So it's not that's a very broad sweeping generalization, but yeah, that's some of the things that I've definitely heard in people's commentaries in the competition world.
Wow. So what are the challenges? Massive, big swing festival. You at the helm. What are the things that keep you awake?
Everything. Everything. It is, yeah, it's a massive undertaking, and I do almost kill myself over it every year. And of course, it doesn't make money. Quite the opposite. It loses a large amount of money. It is essentially a very expensive party that I throw for my friends every year. But I just really believe in it so strongly. And my goals for starting it, I've seen them take shape and start to play out already. So, you know, I wanted somewhere for European dancers to be spotlighted, not in any a secondary way to the North American dancers. And I know it's crazy to say as an Australian, but there is still this stigma that in Europe, a lot of the paid work goes to North American professionals, mm-hmm. and there's not so much vice versa. European dancers don't work so much in North America as the North Americans do. Of course, it is a North American dance and culture, so that does make sense. But I just feel like Europe is kicking it. You know, European dancers are spectacular. The level here is amazing. The things that are going on, the level of musicality and style and creativity. And I just really wanted a stage for that. Mm. And I also wanted to create an event that showcased Lindy Hop to the general public in a better way, because I think oftentimes, you know, us Lindy Hoppers, we live in a bubble.
Yeah.
We do. And, you know, we sit on the floor to watch our shows and competitions, and our surrounds are not always so pretty because we'd rather spend our money on the band or the DJ, which is I completely love about our community. But what it means is so often what would be those amazing, say, videos that would encourage more people to join our community or would create paid opportunities for us to get Lindy Hop in on stage, in films, in commercials, who knows what. They don't happen because we don't look as slick or as professional as we could, because there's an empty bandstand in the background, or there's the lighting is very poor, it's amateur film, you know, these kind of things. So I wanted to create a European competition event and try to set it up in a more glamorous way, which of course takes years to build, and I'm still getting there year by year. We're slowly trying to increase the budget and make it look more glamorous, and the videos are getting nicer every year. And my next step is I want to be able to run it, especially at least the showcase divisions, where we can sell tickets to the public, so the public can actually be in that room, because it really is this amazing spectacle that is so entertaining and so approachable. You know, everybody loves swing music. What's going on is acrobatic and spectacular, and we're in these, you know, locked away in a hotel somewhere, no general public in the room at all. So I would love to put that in front of the public, and I think really great things would come from that. But of course, we have to grow before we can, you know, afford venues like that. So that's the goal. That's the dream.
Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah, absolutely. televised European Swing Dance Championships, televised internationally. How would that be?
You have loads of really good categories as well at the European Swing Dance Championships. How do you come up with those? Because there are a lot of special, kind of the Eurostar and the People's Choice and all that kind of stuff. How did you come about with that?
I am really thoughtful about divisions, and I've tried a lot of different things. Some of them don't work and some of them do, and we change them a bit every year as we're trying to find what works for the European community. Everything's just originally based on the North American competition model, and we try new things. So yeah, I think the Eurostar award is really important because it's it reminds people, even in this sort of sphere of competition, that spirit is really important.
Yeah.
And I'm so proud of my Eurostar, you know, and everything they've done. I think you said you interviewed Kat Foley, right?
Yeah, we did.
My Eurostar.
Well, Kevin.
You know, they're all just doing so well and representing Lindy Hop to the world, European Lindy Hop as well, to the world in such a great way. They're positive people. They're energetic. They put good energy out into the world as well as beautiful dancing. So, yeah, of course, I really wanted to find some way to show that that was valued, even if, because they were newer dancers, they weren't necessarily in the masters divisions and competing and winning those titles. So yeah, that was really important. The People's Choice, that was a big gamble. I didn't know if people would be really offended by that, but it turned out great. The random judges from the audience that got chosen to be a People's Choice judge loved the experience. It also gave everyone some insight into how difficult it is to be a judge at European Swing Dance Championships. Yeah. That is a real skill and a real challenge, and that you can see how the judges agonize over their results. Like, nothing is done flippantly.
Mm. So, and you publish the sheets, which is amazing.
Exactly. So everyone, I try to be really transparent and give everyone an understanding of what's going on in the judging system and the scorekeeping system. And hopefully then the competitors also get a lot of feedback from that. They can actually look at the results and understand what the judges have decided and improve upon themselves for that reason.
That's great. Well, we're almost out of time, so we're going to have a quick fire round. So your favourite solo jazz move?
Tabby the Cat.
Favourite burlesque prop?
Feather fans.
Your favourite dance competition or event?
European Swing Dance Championships.
Your most admired follow?
Most admired follow. Yep. That's too hard. That's so hard.
First one that comes into your head.
Well, I was just instantly jumped to my heroes. So, but choosing one is so mean.
We'll give
so
you a
mean.
Couple.
Let's go. Okay, let's just go. If it's going to be down to swivels, Jewel McGowan.
Okay, lead.
That's worse. So cruel. My favorite lead, Juan Vichafani.
Oh, there we go. If you were to give yourself advice from the future back to the young Sharon Davis back in Australia, what would you advise her?
Ooh, that's really good. That's hard to narrow it down to one. I would
give
say
a couple.
Well, the thing is now, beginner students today have more than I had back then. So I would say take advantage of the amazing resources that you have. I grew up, Lindy-wise, in a very isolated city. This was before YouTube, before even DVDs. So we really fought for all our resources to see all of the vintage films with swing dancing featured in it, to learn from international instructors. All this, it was such a struggle. It was a huge commitment of time and money. And now, it's so easy. It's so easy. But I think for that reason, people don't take advantage of it. It's maybe even overwhelming. There's so many events, so many workshops. Yeah. If you go on YouTube and just search for Lindy Hop, that is not helpful. Like millions of results. So I know it's difficult to wade through all the options, but don't be overwhelmed by it. Try and learn from as many teachers as you can, since I'm guessing whoever is listening, you probably have multiple choices. Try to get out of your hometown and go to international events. Try and listen to lots of different music, because you know Spotify makes it so easy now. Spotify, iTunes, hop on the YouTube machine and look at those vintage clips, because now they're there, they're free, they're available. And I know they are, because even though my original collection was so hard won, I now put them up there free for you to watch. So you've got to actually watch them. For instance, JazzMad, my school, we have a YouTube channel and we post up vintage clips all the time. They're all there for free with all the information, historical information about where they come from. And I think because it's so easy, a lot of my students don't watch them. So take advantage of the resources. That is my advice. Do it.
Amazing. Thank you very much, Sharon Davis. It's been a pleasure. And we hope to have you back soon.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
For more on-demand content from Rockstep Radio, go to rockstepradio.com.